using science to debunk myths. From the pandemic to climate fraud. Thanks for listening to Sky Dragon Slaying on TNT Radio.
Hi, welcome back on the show today. It's a great pleasure for us to have Dr. Charles Anderson. Dr. Anderson, he's an applied scientist, an expert in spectroscopy. He runs his own laboratory. And he's also very much involved in politics. If you look on his blog, it's called objectivistindividualist.blogspot.com. He's very forthcoming about what he believes in. He's a great believer in individual sovereignty. He believes in the right to liberty, property, and self-ownership, and the personal pursuit of happiness. He's one of these crazy conspiracy theorists, obviously, like us. Anybody who advocates that the government shouldn't be running their life is a danger, like all of us. So, it's a pleasure to have him on the show. We're talking about matters scientific. And looking through your blog, Charles, I see you make a lot of posts on politics, and you're a big fan of Ayn Rand. And it's a pleasure to read your work, because I, to be honest with you, I haven't read it for a while. And you're commenting on a lot of things there, and you're getting stuck into the fake pandemic. And you posted quite an interesting blog in April about the kiss. Nancy Pelosi kissed the commander-in-chief, the US president, they call him that. And he was well within his personal space, and you did a nice analysis. You were crunching the numbers, and you were making a good point that this was not following the science. You know, even if our own leaders, the pretender-in-chief Biden, doesn't abide by the rules, why should we? Let's go into that area of your interest, Charles. You tell us a bit more about your personal views and what motivates you.
Well, okay. Just a quick comment on the Nancy Pelosi kiss there. It was a fun exercise, and it was only meant as fun, really. But basically, mathematically, I showed that if she was not to violate being within 6 feet for 15 minutes rule that they had, if you thought of the virus as spreading out into a volume and therefore diffusing as it spread out from Joe Biden, the time that she would have to make her move was essentially lightning fast, in order to not violate their criteria.
0.0024 seconds. Right. I love it. We are such nerds, aren't we? Those of us who work in STEM, you know, we love to crunch the numbers, and you have to mock them, don't you? Really, because these were arbitrary. Arbitrary idea, wasn't it? The imposition of a 6 feet distance. As if that, you know, that has no basis whatsoever in medical science, and people go along with it. They go along with it. They're told by the politicians, and if you'd have watched the news this week, CDC have rolled back all their mandates. They've pretty much said natural immunity is just as good as anything. There was no benefit to anything they really imposed on us, and we're back to square one, aren't we? Anybody who didn't have the JB jab, anybody who was smart enough to not take the knee to government and say, no, I'm doing my own thing. We could be saying, I told you so now, but I think that there are a lot of recriminations, aren't there? A lot of people are now pointing the fingers. Is it Dr. Fauci? Who is it? Is it the UN? You know, it's like it's forming the circle of the firing squad, isn't it? Going to be shooting each other soon, aren't they? It's a matter of time before they'll turn each other in.
Well,
I have a quote that I'd like to share with you guys. History is a set of lies that people have agreed upon. That was said by Napoleon, who knew something about history. And apparently they've applied the same thing to, quote, science. We have a vast dynamic globe that's spinning around with a number of variable factors and a number of variable energy sources. And they try to describe it with an anecdotal single parameter linear hypothesis. And just to reinforce their hypothesis, they start off with a bunch of proxy data. Daniel Gabriel Fahrenheit invented the first thermometer in 1724. There was a minimal amount of distribution of there. There was minimal record keeping. There was minimal uniformity in construction of thermometers. And so what they try to do is create a past temperature record that matches their hypothesis. And we were talking about Michael Mann, and he's the one that whittled the hockey stick. And so they have a fake graph for what they claim is atmospheric carbon dioxide ratios. And we don't have time to discuss why that's fake, but it shows a ramp up, and they're saying, well, this ramp up is due to human emission of carbon dioxide by combusting of hydrocarbons. Okay, well, that's great. But he had to get rid of what happened before the Little Ice Age, which was the medieval warming period, which was warmer than it is today, made a big bump on the opposite end of the hockey stick where the handle was supposed to be. So he went out and found 3 bristlecone pine trees and was able to analyze their tree rings and say that, well, the medieval warming period only occurred in medieval Europe and the rest of the world was just fine. And so early on in this thing, I got a book by Andrew Montford, who's on our list of future guests, and it's called The Hockey Stick Illusion. And what he points out in this book is that tree ring width is actually not so much a function of temperature, it's a function of a multiple bunch of parameters, including precipitation, which is independent of temperature, predation, which is from insects, grazing animals, and diseases, which is independent of temperature, and then temperature. And then recently, I just found another thing on dendrochronography where they say that in addition to those factors, temperature, altitude, and orientation, whether you're on the east, west, north, or south side of a particular mountain or land feature, would also affect tree ring growth. So here he has used this, extrapolated this artifact, and he's using that as a proxy. And I wrote a great article on that at Canada Free Press back in 2010. It's called Amazing New Ronco Proxy Croc. But now I'm going to be updating some additional data on that. And one of the other little proxies that they like to use to tell us is temperature is iridium. It's a transitional metal from the platinum group, and it's 0.001 parts per million, or in layman's term, 1 part per billion. It has 34 available isotopes. They're able to go out and take a couple of ice cores in Antarctica and Greenland, and they're able to go out and take a couple of sediment layer cells, and they're able to say that the distribution of the isotopes in this extremely rare element, what are they doing? Isolating a couple of different atoms in their whole entire sample? And they're able to say, well, based on the distribution of isotopes, we can tell you what the temperature was. Absolutely crazy. So, Charles, do you have any additional information on use of iridium as a temperature proxy?
Frankly, no.
I do not. All right. Well, let's finish up on ice cores as a proxy, because what you have in the way of an ice core is they like to tell you that the thickness of the ice core, just like the thickness of a tree ring, is a function of temperature. Well, you can have a cold year with a whole lot of snow, which is what it takes to form the ice core pack, or you can have a warm year with a whole lot of snow. You can have direct sublimation of an ice pack directly into evaporation out into the sky. So basically what you're talking about is you're talking about the amount of snow that was left at the end of each year, and you're trying to project that as being a function of temperature when it's a function of other variables beside temperature that you have no knowledge or control over. So basically everything they've got in the way of past temperature record is extrapolation. And what we learned in engineering is that you can interpolate with a good degree of accuracy, but the further you extrapolate on any set of data, the worse your error rate becomes. And that's the problem. They're trying to project this as being fact when they will not allow you to question any of their parameters or any of the things that they use to project it. It's the whole thing is just absolutely bass backwards. And we've got to get people in the STEM industry to stand up to this and say, no, I'm sorry. We're going back to the traditional scientific method, which is what we base Principia Scientific on. We want to have things that are empirically verifiable. that well, are
what's the problem with academia then, Joe? Because I mean, we should have that position in academia. That should be the active working position. I mean, that's how I am. I work in academia, and I tell you, that's not the sort of attitude we have, as you know, that I see around this desire to do real good science and be skeptical. So what's going wrong? What happened to our education system, to our academic system? Because that's who's supporting it. At any moment now, the academic system could take a look at this. People outside the field, astrophysicists such as myself or physicists, we could take a look at this and they could all collectively say, because it's so obvious, oh, you know what? That's all wrong. Let's stop supporting it. But they don't. They refuse to. And they're just full bore supporting it. So why is that happening?
Well, it's happening because 97% of academics, they say and do whatever the paymasters say. Whoever pays the grants, whoever does the funding, controls the word, you know, the output. And as you said yourself, Joe Posner, you can't even get published because you're going down the heretic route of saying that sun drives climate. It's absurd that you would even go that far when everybody knows at the EPA that it's carbon dioxide. And in fact, Charles, you wrote a blog entry on your post on the 30th of June, Supreme Court rules, EPA must obey the law. You pointed out that the EPA now are not, the Environmental Protection Agency, are not even obeying the law, aren't they? It's politics, it's the agenda. They're following an agenda. Flights of fantasy, the Clean Air Act, I'm reading from your article here, the EPA has declared that carbon dioxide is a pollutant under the Clean Air Act. But never, when the Clean Air Act was passed in law, was CO2 a pollutant. Only under Obama, during the Obama era, they decided to politicize CO2, and all of a sudden it becomes a pollutant. You know, it's not science, is it? It's just all about controlling us, making us poorer. It's an agenda that has got the veneer of science, but when you scratch the surface, there's very little actual science there, and the numbers are all cobbled together, aren't they?
Well, when the EPA did its review was to determine whether or not CO2 was harmful to mankind, it was a joke. It was really a total joke. They did not do a proper review. They basically took the word of the UN IPCC reports, the political part of the reports at that, as their justification. And they did no independent evaluation, scientific evaluation, of whether or not CO2 really was a harm to mankind. Now, it is kind of interesting that they're between a rock and a hard place now. They've declared that it is dangerous, and they're, in a way, they're required to do something about that. But the Clean Air Act provides ways to handle pollutants which are totally unadaptable to handling CO2, which is not originating from a point source such as a power plant. They don't have the tools to address it. So now they put themselves in a fix that they've declared that it's dangerous and therefore they should do something about it. But the legislation gives them no way to do anything about it. That's kind of funny in a way, but it's also tragic.
Yeah, and they totally ignore the point that human breath, we exhale carbon dioxide. I mean, we are, it's subtly, they're saying we are polluters just for breathing. And this is so evil, isn't it? They literally are saying that we are the cause of climate change by existing.
Well, you have to remember that.
They ended up losing big time in the Supreme Court at the 1st of July when the Supreme Court in West Virginia versus the EPA, they made a ruling that said the best system emissions reduction was not in conforming with the Clean Air Act of 1963. And what they had done is that they said, well, we're going to use the gap filler statute, and that way we can go ahead and impose cap and trade. And the Supreme Court said, no, if the Congress hasn't authorized you to do that particular type of enforcement actions, you need to go back to Congress and have Congress do that. Huge ground-shaking thing. And as far as the STEM industry waking up, I think we've been in a coma for a long time, and we're in the process of a new renaissance. And if it's not the global warming hoax that's going to overturn this apple cart, it will certainly end up very short order being the jabs and the allopathic medicine fraud, which are too enormous to ignore. And once people wake up to the fact that, well, Jesus Christ, the doctors and the pharmaceutical industries and the FDA and the CDC and the NIH and the NHS, and they've all been lying to us for over a century, and they know it. And so then there will be an enormous amount of discredit with them, and then we'll be in a situation where we can start instigating a true history and a true science that will free mankind for eternity, and hopefully we'll never end up in another one of these medieval periods like we're currently going through right now.
Yeah, and I'd like to jump in and say that there's actually a lot of optimism amongst those of us who are looking at the bigger picture here, that the rise of the BRICS nations, the war in Ukraine is a factor as well, isn't it? The war in Ukraine has pretty much exposed NATO as a paper tiger. The idea that NATO, US hegemony, military hegemony, it's falling apart. The Russians, other BRICS nations, Brazil, India, China, South Africa, they're forming their own trading bloc. They really are. They're not taking us seriously anymore. Our politicians have sold us out on the world stage. We're not. Our credibility is being shot. And it's up to us, as you say, those of us with critical reasoning skills, to hold our politicians to account. Those of us in STEM, who work in STEM, we really have to speak for the majority who don't understand science, who can't crunch the numbers, and point out the fact that these are gross errors of judgment in policy and application of science. The confrontation with Russia was foolish. The ability to dictate terms is gone. The idea that the West, this arrogance that we've had for too long, the petrodollar is in decline. We're seeing the Russian ruble come to the fore. And at the back of it, I think the point is we've been destroyed by corruption. It's just gone so far that our economies are crumbling. And those that have not sold out to this global agenda, World Economic Forum agenda, those countries who hold truth to their own sovereignty, holding fast, they're doing very well, aren't they? India is doing very well. China's, being China. Other countries have decided they're not going to follow the dictates of America anymore. And when we say America, we really mean the global elite. The globalists, they've had their day. And I feel that, correct me if I'm wrong, if you disagree, but I sense that there is a move now towards challenging authority. We've seen protests. We've seen a movement. I get reports from people about rewriting textbooks. I'm working with colleagues to write more books. Our book in 2010, Slaying Sky Dragon, Death of the Greenhouse Gas Theory, people are saying, well, but shouldn't you update that? Shouldn't you do more? And we should be tying in with the complicity with these the Bill Gates types, the Klaus Schwab types, who have a finger in every pie. In every form of corruption, government corruption, they are instrumental in twisting the science to suit their own agenda. So, I'm pretty optimistic that the way things are going, we will be coming to the fore, because people are turning to stations like TNT Radio and other independent sources who are not afraid to call out the lies and the fake narrative. And I think that's what we have to keep doing, because we're joining the dots, aren't we, gentlemen? We're kind of joining the dots and trying to put it in simpler terms. The mumbo jumbo, the fake science, it might fool a few people for a short spell of time. I think most people now beginning to realize that the vaccine mandates, they were not based on science, but on politics. And really, science has been misused and abused. And only if we stand up for what we believe in the scientific method, we will get some redress. Do you tend to agree with that? Or do you think I'm maybe just being a little bit too optimistic?
Well, I'd like to see people take science, real science, that follows the scientific method, that is what science is, more seriously. I am afraid that there is going to be a lot of kickback against science, however, because in the name of science, we've created this catastrophic man-made global warming theory and with all of its horrendous consequences for people's standard of living, You know, with the gasoline prices and fuel prices for heating going up at such rates as they have, many people are really suffering from it. And they're going to be angry about it. And they're going to be angry at scientists who told them the wrong things and made them believe in this ridiculous theory. And the same thing is true about the pandemic science problems. You know, the masks are not effective, but they were told they were. And there are still people running around wearing masks, thinking they're effective, apparently, when they're not. So it's just, you know, these problems are, unfortunately, I think, if anything, perhaps lowering the status of scientists. We may have a hard time getting people back to believing that science is actually the rational way to help understand the world and a rational way to help improve their standard of living and allow them to live more secure and happy lives, which is really what it is if you do science as science is supposed to be done. But when science sells out to the politicians, whether it's in the medical area or it's in this climate area, then we're going to have severe consequences as scientists going forward in terms of how people regard us and view our reputation.
Thanks, Charles. We're going to take another short break. We'll be right back after the short break.
You should hear what Rick Munn's talking about.
In England. Oh, yes. England. Good old England, eh? Good old Blighty. Well, well, well. Guess what? There's a recession. And we're in the middle of it. And it's going to get worse, as predicted. Not doom merchants, not gloom merchants, not prophets of doom. Simply joining the dots. Yes, we like to join the dots at TNT Radio. We get a lot of flack for it. But hell's bells, eventually, the media come around and even the governor of the Bank of England comes around and validates the things that we have been hypothesizing for the previous several months. Bank of England governor defends rate hike ahead of looming recession. So he's whacking the interest rates up in the UK by 0.5 percentage point, which is the biggest single rise in decades. UK economy is to be in recession for more than a year. Listen, it's going to be a heck of a lot more than a year. This ain't going away within 12 months. This is just the beginning.
Locked and Loaded with Rick Munn on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Affordable housing. We can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
During the pandemic, 129 billion unrecyclable masks were used and thrown away every month. Over 3 billion masks now pollute the oceans. Let's not turn a blind eye to this disgusting plastic pollution. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Hi, welcome back. Sky Dragon Slaying with us today. Our special guest is Dr. Charles Anderson, an applied scientist and co-author of our book, Slaying the Sky Dragon, Death of the Greenhouse Gas Theory. It's a benchmark book, the first full volume refutation of the greenhouse gas theory. The book says quite conclusively that carbon dioxide is not the climate control knob. And we're adamant about that. We said it 10 years ago and people are waking up and we were the first. And, you know, we like to be at the cutting edge of science and we like to call out people who are liars and frauds. And on your blog, objectivistindividualist.blogspot.com, Charles, you were on in March. You were pointing the finger at the Biden administration about the misdirection on U.S. oil production. And at the top of the show, you made a comment that struck home with me. You were saying that you didn't like to refer to oil as a fossil fuel. And I I'm really on board with that, because a lot of us actually think that the concept of fossil fuel theory is also another element of junk science. And I'm curious to know your views on that. You know, do you feel it's a diminishing resource? Do you feel that we're being lied to, like we have been everything else? Or, you know, do you want to have a say on that with it while you have the chance?
Well, I will say that I think fracking was quite a wonderful development, let's say, we have huge resources for oil and gas in the United States as a result. Actually, Europe has resources that they are unwilling to tap into or unable to themselves. There is great potential for fracking in many places around the world, I'm sure. But in the U.S. in particular, it was a miracle, basically, a wonderful development over time. It's been given a bad name by the environmentalists, but in reality, it made us energy independent briefly, freed us up from a good deal of involvement in the Middle East that was no longer necessary, as it were. And it made it possible for us to have inexpensive and reliable energy. And it certainly made it easier for everybody in transporting goods and manufacturing where energy is used, and it made everything less expensive. And now we've turned around under Biden, and he's shut down oil leases. He's made it hard to get environmental permits to develop the oil leases that companies have. He's shut down various pipelines and are those that were being planned as well. And he's kept drilling and exploration out of parts of Alaska that we could be developing, and offshore as well. So he's really done everything he can to destroy the oil and gas industries, which is exactly what he said he was going to do. It should not have come as any surprise to Americans, but he's doing what he's long wanted to do. And it's having horrible consequences. So we're paying, 1.5 to 2 times what we used to pay for gasoline. And there are many people for whom that means that their budgets are really terribly stressed as a result. And so the suffering is widespread. I hope there'll be the suitable reaction against that. And as that reaction occurs, that people will start to say, we want our oil and gas to be plentiful and inexpensive again.
Just to jump in there, Charles, I mean, you're missing a point. The Democrats, they're saying, well, why don't you go green? Why don't you just go out and buy an electric car?
Right. which most people can't afford, even if they can get the big subsidies that the government is offering, they still can't afford that. But the other part of that problem is that the electric car, it brings its own problems. You have to open up an incredible number of lithium mines and cobalt mines and nickel mines around the world, with all the environmental consequences of doing that, if you're going to convert the fleet of American cars into electric vehicles. The strain in mining around the world would be incredible. Meanwhile, the U.S. is hardly allowing any new mining ventures to occur in the U.S. For so-called environmental reasons. So basically, they're saying, we'll go out to the rest of the world and get them to do the dirty mining so that we can build a whole bunch of these electric vehicles, which will still have to be charged with electricity generated by some means somewhere, usually in the United States somewhere. So it's a runaround. It's not a real solution, which they present it to be. It's not really a solution at all.
No, another thing, if I can add to that, is the problem with the fact that the batteries themselves, electric car batteries, which are lithium ion, that they're actually not stable, are they? And we've had recent reports. There was one report we covered at Principia Scientific back in June, where a massive fire in Delhi in India, an EV parking space gutted 100 vehicles. Also adding to that, where are we now? Yeah, October last year, first responders are not in the US. first responders are not equipped to fight EV lithium battery fires. Apparently, when emergency services respond to a car crash involving EVs, they have to let it burn. They cannot physically do anything. And if you are trapped in an EV that's burning, God help you, because there's not much that can be done. There's no way you can apply normal firefighting techniques to these fires. So a lot of people are being advised to be very, very wary about being a passenger in an EV car. So, and we're not being told this, are we? This is not something you're going to see by objective reporters on CNN or the BBC, because they don't exist. The problem is they're all sold out to the going green agenda. And people are not being advised that these so-called clean vehicles, as you said, I mean, they're relying on rare earth minerals that are coming from largely from out of Mongolia. So if you're in the US and you care about your national strategic interests, why would you rely for all your transport resources on a potential foe? I mean, look at the state of affairs now with Taiwan. It's a very, very strange way of doing your running your country if you're allowing your energy sector to be run from abroad and not from home. And you made the point. Under Trump, America was self-sufficient in oil. It wouldn't have had this problem under Trump. But now we're seeing the world, the West, is being held to ransom by Russia. It's a bit of a failure, isn't it, in terms of protecting your national interests? You know, again, it's all about joining up the dots, isn't it? There's not enough people seeing what's going on here with the globalist agenda. Globalist agenda seems to be about destroying national interests in the service of the corporate elite.
Well, I think you're largely right about that there. The point has been made quite often that by restricting our own oil and gas industry so much and reducing our production relative to what it would be, we are in effect allowing the Russians to take advantage of the great increase in the value of their own oil and gas to finance their war in Ukraine. So this again, helped lead to that Russian adventure. And indeed, the last time that the Russians were aggressive in taking over Crimea and the first parts of the Donbass that they took over was another period of time when oil and gas prices were high. So basically, whenever the oil and gas prices get high, it seems as though the Russians get aggressive. And that's not a good thing. So people like to talk about catastrophic man-made global warming is somehow or other going to cause a lot of future strife. But actually what's going to cause future strife, I would say, would be our reductions in the supply of reliable and inexpensive energy that come with trying to reduce production of oil and gas.
Yeah, and just to add to my point, I mean, I take your point, but just going back to the dire strait of the UK vehicle situation, I mean, with the EV situation, we ran an article, EV buyers beware as GM issues start warning. October last year, we ran an article where General Motors is issuing a safety warning for Bolt EVs, saying do not park your Chevy Bolt within 50 feet of other vehicles in case it catches fire. So, yeah. I mean, are they?
How about parking it close enough to your house to recharge it?
Your Chevy Bolt has to social distance from all the other cars. Yeah, isn't that hilarious?
Try running a cable out from your home to charge your vehicle up with that. I mean, just shows you the insanity of it, doesn't it?
You can forget ever having reasonably priced energy again, because part of that is based on money supply. And when you're just absolutely turning the printing presses loose, under Trump, he printed $6 trillion of deficit spending. We've already printed more than that in a year and a half under FJB. So, you know, when you've got a fixed amount of commodities available on the market and you just keep printing more and more money, supply and demand just tells you very simply that the supply is not increasing. And so the demand is going to escalate enormously. We're facing an enormous period of inflation, and this is intentional. These same people have been robbing the bank repeatedly since 1913 when they passed the Federal Reserve Act.
Yeah, I'm tended. My feeling is when you look at solar power, when you look at wind power, when you look at the mass rollout of compulsory electric vehicles, for example, in London, you know, you really do have to have electric vehicles to have any kind of free rein to be able to go in and out of the city. We're being coerced into an inefficient economy. And as you say, I think it's deliberate. I think it's deliberate to make things more expensive, to make food more expensive, to make the cost of living higher. Homes are more expensive. Insurance is hard for businesses to get through red tape. It's, you know, if you wanted to shoot yourself in the foot and destroy your economy, you couldn't do it much better than the Biden administration is doing now. I mean, it's the same in the UK. It's the same in Australia and other countries. We really are destroying our economies from within. You know, we can point the finger at Russia or China and say, well, they're the enemy. But no, I feel that our own politicians are the real enemy. If anything, they're a fifth column. And I don't really believe that they're truly switched on to the green agenda. I mean, do you really believe that? I mean, I don't know anybody who truly believes our politicians are going green. Is it virtue signaling or is it just pure corruption? I mean, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think it's there's a healthy part of unhealthy proportion of it that's corruption. There's an awful lot of special interest business going on here. That one of the things that you tend to get when you get big government is you grow special interests who want to get their hands on the power that big government has and all the opportunities to enrich themselves at the expense of the other people in the country, the vast majority of the people in their country. So I think big government and corruption and special interests all go hand in hand, unfortunately. So it seems to be a fact of life, fact of human nature. But
Sorry, just to add to that, I mean, I'm thinking about the vehicle situation and the right to repair. People are talking about that consumers should have the right to repair their vehicles. I know cases, I've read cases anecdotally, I've heard people tell me that they've owned electric vehicles and the vehicle's gone out of warranty, the batteries are no longer serviceable, and they've been quoted by mechanics to pay up to $15,000 for new batteries, which is more than the vehicle's even worth. So again, my sense is we're not being told, are we? The journalists, the media are not. I mean, buyer beware. They say buyer beware. We've had it with the jibby jabs, the vaccines. I mean, you don't go out and buy something without checking the facts. And you look to the media, you look to the so-called journalists to point you in the right direction, show reports of things that have low safety margins. For example, you know, the fire risk we just mentioned with the Chevy Bolt. These are things that most people have never even heard of. You know, we're throwing it out now as an example, but beyond the realms of TNT or other independent sources, you're not going to know these things. So it's little wonder that the average voter is very ill-equipped to be able to pass judgment on the state of the current economy and political life. I mean, what do we do? I mean, we're tearing our hair out here, aren't we? But where do we start? It's like the whole thing is a mess.
Tesla's fixing to have another problem in California. The government out there has decided that their self-driving cars are a deceptive trade practice, and they're going to fine them enormously.
Deceptive trade practice.
Yeah.
I just don't get it. I mean, it's just nonsense.
Take that,
I mean,
Elon.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of these unintended, it's the law of unintended consequences, isn't it, really? I mean, I don't know what the law is in the US, but I know here in the UK, legislation has been passed. We're now going to be seeing self-driving vehicles. Mandates have been changed. Drivers' regulations have been changed. Now, drivers have to give way to pedestrians. Jaywalking now, priority goes to the jaywalker. If you hit somebody crossing the street, you're, as a driver of a vehicle, now liable. That really is the nonsense of where we're going with this. I don't know, is it woke or is it, what is it? It's just trying to, it's engendered chaos, isn't it? It's deliberately brought about to bring corruption, to bring chaos. I mean, I just don't know how we tackle it. I mean, How far does it have to go before people realize that it's just insanity? Anyway, gentlemen, we're going to have to take a final break now. This is TNT Radio Live.
We're saved. A professor has found the root cause of climate change. And you guessed it, white supremacy. This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio. Stay tuned.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
Dr. Jacqueline Gill of the University of Maine has now claimed that, quote, the root causes of climate change are capitalism, white supremacy, colonialism. Gill is an associate professor of paleoecology and plant ecology at the University of Maine. If Dr. Gill is correct, the only solution is for the whole world to go Marxist. Yes, that's right. Give up your freedoms, your rights, and listen to the centrally planned economy. But here's the catch. Even if we give up all our freedoms to fight the alleged climate crisis, the weather and climate will not notice. This professor joins two NASA scientists in claiming the same thing, that white supremacy is a driver of climate change. Yes, all a day's work in the wacky world of climate. For the Morano Minute, this is Mark Morano on TNT Radio.
People join Walk MS to raise awareness and funds that change the world for everyone affected by multiple sclerosis. Walk MS brings communities together, creating teams with friends, loved ones, and coworkers to rally around those we care about and end MS forever. Together, we can change the world for people with MS. Register today at walkms.org.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
A former federal election official called the $400 million plus that Mark Zuckerberg spent to finance the local elections was a carefully orchestrated attempt to influence the 2020 vote and recommended that all states ban private funding of election offices. Hans von Spakovsky, a former Federal Election Commission member, said the billionaire Facebook founder's donations to a pair of non-profits that provided funding to nearly 2,500 counties in 49 states violated fundamental principles of equal treatment of voters, since it may have led to unequal opportunities to vote in different areas of a state. This allowed the conversion of official government election offices into get-out-the-vote operations for one political party and to insert political operatives into election offices to influence and manipulate the outcome of the election.
News more twisted than soap operas and with worse actors. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hi, welcome back. Dr. Charles Anderson is with us, and we're discussing all things related to science and technology, and we've done the greenhouse gas theory. And last section of the show, I've got a question for you, Charles. I'm reading your blog, and bearing in mind half the population are below average intelligence, you're an advocate for individuality, the rights of the individual, limits of legitimate government, morality, history. These are things you discuss, government policy, business ethics and so forth, education. What do we do then? I mean, do you feel that, is it right that we then say to people there should be smaller government when half the population don't appear to have the intellectual competence to run their own lives? Can you see that there are people, I would say at least half of the population, that really do need direction? I mean, they follow government, they're elected politicians.
No, I disagree with you on that. I think most people are more competent to live their own lives, maybe not in the way that the elite would see as acceptable to them as the elite. But I think most people would rather and would, in fact, do a better job anyway of managing their own lives than, say, a bureaucrat in Washington, D.C. or some other capital in the world who doesn't know them and who doesn't actually care to know them. I mean, part of the reason we have identity politics playing a big role in the United States and much of the world, I think, is because it's easy for government to classify people that way and to say everybody we toss into this little category, we can treat as being the same. But in fact, they're all individuals. They're all, you know, there's a tremendous difference from one person to another. However you may classify them, whether you classify them by how much money they make, or you classify them by their skin color or their ethnicity, or whether you classify them as male or female, it doesn't matter how you break it down in these kind of general terms and then lump, millions of people into that category. There is too much difference between people for the government to actually understand what their needs are, what their which by the way can vary depending on what time of period of their lives they're in, and so many variables that no bureaucrat can imagine. So all the bureaucrats do is they mess things up. They take us out of the private sector where we can make our own choices to optimize our lives by deciding who we're going to interact with for what purpose, and instead they impose a law upon us, which treats us all, well, ideally would treat us all the same, but in reality, they don't treat us all the same. Whichever way they handle it, whether they discriminate against some groups and they give favors to special interest groups, or if they all try to treat us all as being, essentially round sphere human beings who have no real identity as individuals, they mess everything up. They don't have enough knowledge and they don't have enough desire to know what they're doing. And as a result, almost everything they do is less than optimal. I mean, oftentimes quite disastrous.
I'm being devil's advocate here because I do share what your point of view. Joe Posmer, what do you think to that? Do you think we should be more individualistic, or do you think there's a reason why so many people are sheep and they follow the government?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the longstanding problem in human society. I mean, that's a hard one to tackle. Obviously, we do good with, we do need governance to help structure society. Typically as scientists in the INTJs, we have a bit of a perhaps too naive view of human nature. We tend to think, oh, we can all just get along and we can just live in a completely, sort of anarchist world where we will just make things all work on ourselves. But then consider somebody like Bill Gates, or who will co-opt everything and certainly use force to completely control everything and enslave you. So we do need rational government. Gosh, this is a long-standing problem. How do you get that? Certainly once you have an institution of power, that's going to attract psychopathic people who want to abuse that. Now if you don't have an institution of power, well, psychopathic people are going to create their own, What do you do?
Let me be clear. I'm not advocating anarchy or anything of that nature. I just believe in a limited government. In fact, I believe that our Constitution in the United States set up a very good vision of what limited government should do. And I think we now have government that pays very little attention to the enumerated powers, for instance, that our government was given in our Constitution. I think that's a mistake.
Yeah, you've got a great quote on your blog, objectivistindividualist.blogspot.com, Charles. You've got a quote from Andrew Jackson, and it says, "The people are the government. Administering it by their agents, they are the government, the sovereign power." And, it's going back to that, really, isn't it? We need to get back to the point that we appoint people as agents to act for us. But our role is to monitor them and to keep checks and balances. And I think it's been skewed to the point now where I feel, coming from the point of view as an educator, and my background is as a school teacher, is for too long we've abrogated responsibility to the few. We've dumbed down society so much. But people don't have the critical reasoning skills to know when they're being lied to and exploited. And I think that's, as Joe Posmer indicates, where the INTJ, the Myers-Briggs personality type, the critical reasoning 3%, I think Joe Posmer it might be, that we have to come out and we have to do our bit for society and speak up for those who are, less capable. And I think that's where you've got to have an altruistic aspect to the community, and I think we've lost it. I do feel we're not as altruistic as we used to be. I don't think we help our neighbors as much as we used to. I don't feel that the neighbor community spirit as much as strong as it used to be. I know, speaking from somebody who's lived in the UK most of my life, I know it's on the wane. Do you see it in your life?
I'm not an advocate of altruism because I think that calls for people to sacrifice their own interest. I am an advocate of basically having a benevolent viewpoint towards other people and seeing other people as valuable in your own life, in your interactions with people. So I think I try to treat other people very well personally, and I think people should do that. But altruism is not a phrase I would use. We should have a high regard for the benefit that other people get. I mean, when I run my business, a good part of my remuneration, as it were, is not money. It's the fact that I take a lot of pleasure in solving problems that are helping people to make better products and helping people to keep their jobs making those products and raising their families while they make those products. So there, and some of those products are things like medical devices and medical diagnostics and parts for aircraft that we don't want to be falling out of the sky and that sort of thing. So they have a lot to do with people's safety. And all those things, that the feeling that I'm contributing in that way makes me feel good. And I think it should, be the way everybody would approach their lives, that they want to be productive and they want to be useful. But I don't see it as altruism because I'm not seeing that as sacrificing my own interests along the way. I mean, that is, it's part of my interest, enjoying that. So that deals with that. That's getting into some of these ethical issues, it's difficult to talk about them or solve them in a short time, and maybe especially so because people are raised primarily through government education, and it's especially hard for the government schools to get into ethical issues in any really meaningful way because so many people see things differently. So it's just politically hard to do. And I think it doesn't necessarily match up either with the fact that the government kind of uses their schools that they run as propaganda machines for the benefit of government. One of the things that's really missing in schools is a good study of history, good study of economics. These are other things that just aren't studied and people don't know much about them. And that makes them easier to be misled by big government, I think.
Yeah. And there's a subject that I know used to be taught in American school civics. The idea that you teach people, obviously, about law and order and that kind of thing. And it's about being honorable, isn't it? I mean, I know that the religious element in education is debatable. There are a lot of people who say that you shouldn't have religion in schools. It should be separated. But at some point, you've got to have an element of morality, haven't you? And you've got to got to be introduced somehow or other. And I use the word altruism
I certainly agree with you that morality is actually critical for people, and people should think very rationally about what they believe is ethical in their behavior and try very hard to live their lives in accordance with their principles on ethics. I'm personally not religious, many people get such moral ideas as they have anyway from religion, although I think that's a little bit limited way to get your ideas of morality, but it's better than nothing for many people. But yes, morality is important, and it's something pretty much ignored in the schools in terms of the real basic issues.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Well, the banking elite want to impose a social credit score. And here's another fun fact about EVs. Because they haven't increased the electrical generation capacity in the UK, July 1st, they required all EV charging homes to have a smart meter so that they can reverse the energy flow in times of high demand and low production. So you go out to get in your EV in the morning and turns out you've been warming your neighbor's house. That's what they're going to do. And it'll be all based on social credit score. So you won't have your choice of morality. The government's going to choose your morality for you based on everything that you've ever said and everything you've done. Absolutely crazy.
Well, I think we've seen lessons on the destruction of morality in countries that have been held by the communists for a long period of time. One thing they're very effective at doing is destroying personal morality.
I've got to cut you short. I mean, this is now the final few minutes, final 30 seconds of the show. And I just want to thank you. It's been a wonderful opportunity to finally, after all these years, 10 years, to actually speak with you live on air. I wish you well with your business. It's been a wonderful opportunity to share your thoughts. And we wish you the very best for the future. Dr. Charles Anderson, thank you very much.